Well, Jesus is going away. Term is nearly over. So before the teacher goes, revision time. And that's what we've been looking at in John 13 to 16. Jesus is cramming his disciples' minds before he goes. But time has run out. I still have many things to say to you, but you cannot bear them now. So Christian friends, term is over. Jesus is going. There is still much to be said. But the disciples are in no mind to hear it. And what about next term? So please have John 16 and verses 12 to 22 open in front of you. And we have 2 points this morning, 2 things to say. And point number one, a new teacher. Verse 12, I still have many things to say to you, but you cannot bear them now. So is that the end of their education? No, says Jesus, a new teacher will come. Verse 13, however, when he, the Spirit of truth, has come, he will guide you into all truth. For he will not speak on his own authority, but whatever he hears, he will speak, and he will tell you things to come. So a new teacher who will take over from Jesus. And not only will he revise what we did last term, he will complete your education. So who is he? Well, we're told he's the Spirit of truth. The Holy Spirit himself, who, as we've seen, he proceeds from the Father and the Son. He comes in Jesus' name. But he's not just Jesus' replacement. As we see in this series, he is Jesus' other self. You remember growing fond of a teacher, and then you find that they're leaving, and your heart sinks. No one could replace him, because however good the new teacher is, it will never be the same. Are the disciples' hearts to sink? Oh, he's not as good as Jesus. No, because a new teacher is Jesus returning in his other self. John 14, he tells us, verse 16, and I will pray the Father, and he will give you another helper, that he may abide with you forever, the Spirit of truth. And then verse 18 says, I will not leave you orphans, I will come to you. Jesus returning in his other self. So next term, a new teacher, the Spirit of truth. Now look how Jesus puts it in verse 13. He is the Spirit of truth, and he will guide you into all truth. What I left unsaid, he will finish. If I am the truth, he will fill out the full meaning of that. And he won't put his own spin on it. There'll be no Chinese whispers, verse 13, for he will not speak on his own authority, but whatever he hears, he will speak. And he will tell you things to come. He'll complete your education. Okay, so when the disciples graduate, what will they know? Verse 14. He will glorify me, for he will take of what is mine and declare it to you. When the disciples graduate, they will have a complete revelation of the Son. So much so they'll be able to teach future generations of believers. Since the Godhead is not divided, when the Spirit reveals the Son, he's revealing nothing less, verse 15, than the Father himself. All things that the Father has are mine. Therefore, I said, he will take of mine and declare it to you. Well, come with me, please, to Hebrews chapter 1. Let's Hebrews chapter 1, the opening verses. God, who at various times and in various ways spoke in time past to the fathers by the prophets, has in these last days spoken to us by his Son. So it says the writer, the God who spoke in time past has now spoken in these last days. The God who spoke to the fathers has now spoken to us. The God who spoke in parcels of revelation, different prophets, different times, different ways, has now given us the full story, the final word. God has spoken to us by his Son. It's the ultimate disclosure. It's God himself in the person of his Son. There's nothing more to say. But to whom was that revelation given? Who were the witnesses? When the Son came, when God spoke by the Son, who was there to witness it? Well, it's the disciples, isn't it? Jesus says in John 15, you who have been with me from the beginning. But as soon as we hear that, it's the disciples. A little thought clicks into our heads and say, well, hang on, wait on. Are you sure they're reliable? Aren't these the men who just get the wrong end of the stick time and time again? Aren't we just reading just a few verses on? They don't understand what Jesus is saying. And even if they do understand, they're so slow to get there. If these are the men to whom the revelation of the Son is given, they're bound to get it wrong, aren't they? They're bound to misrepresent the revelation that has come in the Son. And Wednesday night we were talking about the need for an assistant pastor. And we're also talking about the need to train up a man for the ministry. I said, a man in training. My brother looked at me and said, who? Amanda training? Who's she? I had a phone conversation last week, and the other person sent me an email summarizing what we'd said on the phone. Was it accurate? Well, sort of. But it's quite obvious that what I thought I'd said to him and what he'd heard me say to him were actually quite different things. I thought I was saying one thing, and he heard something else. So if the disciples, the witnesses, are to pass on what they've seen and what they've heard, isn't there great scope for misunderstanding and misrepresentation? They didn't hear what he said, and Jesus thought he was saying this to them, and what they actually heard was something completely different. Is there scope for misunderstanding? Well, the answer is no. Verse 13, however, when he, the Spirit of truth, has come, he will guide you into all truth. So next term, a new teacher. And he won't bring to you some new revelation, because the ultimate revelation has already come. What he will do, he will take you into the fullness of that revelation. All that it means. All that Christ came to reveal. All of the Godhead displayed. He will take you into the fullness of that. And accurately, perfectly, and without error, he will press and those things upon you and reveal them to you. He's the Spirit of truth. Verse 14, he will glorify me, for he will take of what is mine and declare it to you. And we know that when the Spirit reveals these things to the disciples, of course he'll be spot on. Not just because he's the Spirit of truth, but because he is Jesus' other self. If you like, he'll provide Jesus' commentary on Jesus. So do you see? The Spirit, he will bring out the full meaning and the full dimensions of all that has already been revealed in the Son. To what end? That this unique group of men, these men who've been with Jesus from the beginning, these disciples, the apostles, that these men become the divinely appointed teachers and interpreters of the revelation that has come in Jesus. So these men will bring out the full meaning and significance of Christ and his cross and the empty tomb and his ascension and his coronation and his seating at the right hand of the Father and his coming again and his everlasting kingdom. So the Jews, they looked at this kaleidoscope of images in the Old Testament, speaking of the coming one. And as they looked at it, they just couldn't make sense of their Old Testament. But now Peter, taught by the Spirit of truth, he has the key that unlocks the Old Testament. And he says, as you look at those kaleidoscope of images, what are you seeing? You're seeing the sufferings of Christ and the glories that will follow. Those things which have been hidden in the mind of God from eternity past. Those things which have now been revealed in the Son. God has in these last days spoken by His Son. Or Paul can now speak of his knowledge in the mystery of Christ. You can read, if you like, the mind of God as it's revealed in Jesus Christ. So do you see? God has spoken to us in these last days by His Son. That's the ultimate revelation, the ultimate disclosure, the coming of the Son. And these men, the apostles, taught by the Spirit, they will bring out the full meaning and significance of the revelation that has come in Jesus Christ. And therefore, these men, these apostles, what will they do? They'll lay the foundation of the church for the generations to come. He will glorify me, for he will take of what is mine and declare it to you. So where do we find these things? Where do we find these things? Taught by the Spirit. The revelation that's come in Jesus. Well, it's the 27 books of the New Testament. They're either written by an apostle or overseen by an apostle. So the Spirit, He doesn't bring some new revelation, because the greatest revelation has already come. The Son. God has spoken by His Son. What He does, He interprets, He explains, He fills out that perfect revelation. The New Testament is the complete story. It's the final word. Nothing more to say. It's the revelation of Jesus Christ, and He is God's last word. Now, Christian friends, certain biblical scholars have come along, the sort you meet on the BBC, and they say things like this. They say, well, we want to find the real Jesus. You know, not the Jesus of the New Testament writers. Because, well, they've added all sorts of things to the real Jesus. They've added all sorts of stories and exaggerations, and they've added bits on that he said, and they've added things on to sort of big him up. We want to get back to the real Jesus, the man from Nazareth. So what we need to do, we need to peel away the husk of the New Testament writings to reveal the truth. Well, that's scholarly tosh. What is the New Testament? It's the revelation of Jesus Christ, written by the eyewitnesses. Eyewitnesses taught by the Spirit of truth. These men are Christ's spokesmen. They've been appointed by Christ, enabled and equipped by the Spirit to explain and to interpret Jesus of Nazareth. Since with every step, they've been taught by the Spirit. This book, this New Testament, is Jesus' commentary on Himself. This is the Spirit of Jesus teaching us about Jesus. This is Jesus on Jesus. For He will not speak on His own authority, but whatever He hears, He will speak. And He will tell you things to come. He will glorify me. That's what you've got in the New Testament. It's all about Christ. He's being glorified. For He will take what is mine and declare it to you. So, Christian friends, doesn't that fill you with a sense of wonder? Because when I read this book, I'm never one step removed from the action. I'm never sort of getting a journalist's view and twist on the events. I'm never sort of getting a rough record of Jesus' words as though, well, that'll do. Here is the Lord of glory revealed in His word. However can I be reluctant to pick up this book, to pore over its pages, and to bust a gut to come and hear it taught and explained and applied, and to live every day in its light? This is not Jesus at arm's length. This is Jesus by His Spirit uncovering Himself to us in all His beauty and majesty and loveliness So we worship and wonder and adore. And they said to one another, did not our hearts burn within us while he talked with us on the road and while he opened the scriptures to us? May our hearts burn within us as we meet with Jesus in his word. Well, let's move on to our second point. A new teacher. Point number two, a new vision. Now you have to stick with me on this one. You have to engage your minds. A new vision. I saw a new vision of Jesus, a view I'd not seen here before. Look at verse 16. A little while and you will not see me, and again a little while and you will see me, because I go to the Father. Jesus is going away. But it's all right, you'll see me again soon. But what does he mean? And the reason that he gives, he says, because I go to my Father. What does he mean? Now, do you remember the atmosphere? Jesus dropped a bombshell. I'm going away. It's the last thing in the world the disciples want to hear. Verse 6 tells us, he says, but because I've said these things to you, sorrow has filled your heart. So what is Jesus doing? Well, he's reassuring them, isn't he? I'm going away, but you'll see me soon. You take your four-year-old to their first day at school, you hold their hand tightly, they hold your hand tightly, you take them into the classroom, and then you come to say goodbye. You say, Daddy's going now. But it's all right, I'll be back soon. A little while and you will not see me, and again a little while and you will see me, because I go to the Father. Well, the disciples don't understand. Verse 17, then some of his disciples said among themselves, what is this that he says to us? A little while and you will see me, and again a little while and you... Sorry, a little while you won't see me, a little while and you will see me, and because I go to the Father... They said, what is this that he says? A little while. We do not know what he's saying. We don't understand. It makes no sense. If he's coming back so soon, why does he have to go in the first place? Why can't he just stay with us all the time? Doesn't make any sense. Now, when we don't understand something, what don't we do? Ask. And so Jesus has to take the initiative with them, doesn't he? Verse 19. Now, Jesus knew they desired to ask him, but none of them plucked up courage to say anything. And he said to them, are you inquiring among yourselves about what I said? A little while and you will not see me, and again a little while and you will see me. And I'll explain. When all appears to have gone wrong, I haven't abandoned you. Verse 20, most assuredly I say to you that you will weep and lament, but the world will rejoice. And you'll be sorrowful, but your sorrow will be turned into joy. Most assuredly I say to you that you will weep and lament, but the world will rejoice. They'll crown his head with thorns. They'll plow his back with the whip. And they'll nail him to the cross. And while the world rejoices, you will weep. And they'll lay him in the tomb. Cold, grey, lifeless, dead. And while the world rejoices, you will lament. You will be sorrowful. A little while, and you will not see me. But on the third day, John will outrun Peter. And finding an empty tomb and an empty shroud, he'll see and believe. And by the day's end, Jesus will meet with his disciples again in that upper room. And you will be sorrowful, but your sorrow will be turned into joy. Jesus again. And then Jesus gives an illustration in verse 21. A woman, when she is in labor, has sorrow because her hour has come. But as soon as she's given birth to the child, she no longer remembers the anguish for joy that a human being has been born into the world. I was chatting with one of the new mums And she was saying, well, I've never been through the anguish of childbirth, but she was saying, you know, when you've been through childbirth and then you have the baby in your arms, well, you forget all the agony. You forget what you've just been through. And then she said, I do it all over again. Because the cause of your pain, the childbirth, has now become the cause of your joy, the little child. When Jesus goes to the cross, like labor pains, there is an awful inevitability. Nothing can stop it now. In fact, the cross is only hours away. The contractions are getting harder and stronger, and soon one contraction will hit another and another and another. Nothing can stop it. Sorrow, anguish, agony, pain. But that's not how it ends. She no longer remembers the anguish for joy that a human being has been born into the world. He's risen. And grief turns to joy. But there's more here to Jesus' words. Let's dig a little bit deeper. Why does Jesus choose this illustration? Why this illustration? Why put it like that? Why talk about a woman in labor and a child being born? Because if you give it the way I said, it's an illustration that's pregnant with Old Testament imagery. If we had time, we could go through things. But all that Old Testament imagery is summed up in Revelation chapter 12. So just come with me briefly to Revelation 12. So Revelation 12, verse 1. We've been through this passage in previous times, so I'm not going to explain huge amounts. You can come back to me afterwards if you want to clarify anything. Now, a great sign appeared in heaven, a woman clothed with the sun, and the moon under her feet, and on her head a garland of 12 stars. Then, being with child, she cried out in labor and in pain to give birth. Now, who is this woman? Well, she's the Old Testament church. In labor, in pain, a believing remnant. It's the stuff of Isaiah 26. A believing remnant just holding on, surrounded by hostile forces. A woman in labor, pleading, longing to be delivered of her child, longing for the day when Messiah will come, the promised seed, the promised one who would come, who would crush Satan's head. And there she is, the Old Testament church, in labor, in agony, waiting to bring forth the Savior. But of course, someone else is waiting. Look at verse 3, and another sign appeared in heaven. And behold, a great fiery red dragon, having 7 heads and 10 horns and 7 diadems on his heads. His tail drew a third of the stars of heaven and threw them to the earth. And the dragon stood before the woman who was ready to give birth, to devour her child as soon as it was born. Who is this great dragon? He's the serpent, isn't he? He's Satan. He's waiting to devour the Christ, waiting to destroy the only one who can challenge his rule. And the Christ comes, verse 5, she bore a male child. But there's a sense in which her pain is not yet over. Her contractions, as it were, are coming thick and fast. You will be sorrowful. Because even as the child is being given birth to, what will happen to him? The Christ will be nailed to a cross. And the dragon bites. And the blood flows. And Jesus dies. And the world rejoices. And the disciples weep. But just when we thought the dragon was devouring the son, at the cross we realize that it's the son who is stamping on the head of Satan. And Satan is defeated. And now the Christ is exalted to the Father's right hand, where he will rule the worlds and he will restore the paradise that has been lost. Verse 5, so she bore a male child who was to rule the nations with a rod of iron. And her child was caught up to God and his throne. Beyond the labor pains, the agony of the cross, the empty tomb, the ascension, and then seated at God's right hand, the glory. And then we bring it back to John 16, verse 22. Having used that illustration, and it's full of that whole sense of the church waiting to give birth to Messiah. Therefore, you now have sorrow, but I will see you again, and your heart will rejoice, and your joy no one will take from you. It's not just that they'll see Jesus after the cross. It's not just they'll see him risen, alive, only then for him to disappear 40 days after that. What Jesus is saying is a much bigger canvas. He's saying that day long promised, when the seed of the woman would come and crush Satan's head, the one who would send the curse into reverse, the one who will restore paradise itself. He's saying that day has come. And all the agony, the pain, he suffers, he bleeds, he dies. And like labor pains, there's an unstoppable momentum. He's going to the cross. But your sorrow will turn to joy. And the cause of your sorrow, the cross, will now become the cause of your joy. Because you'll see Jesus not merely rising from the dead, but you'll see him triumph over sin and death and hell. The promised one has come and has been exalted to God's right hand. Her child was caught up to God and his throne. That's what he's talking about. That's the fullness of the joy that no one will take from you. That this Jesus, this Christ, he will triumph. And it's a new vision of Jesus. Oh, the joy of that resurrection morning. Yes, but it's more, says Jesus. That's just the first step. It's the joy of my triumph, that I reign, King of kings, Lord of lords. I've conquered death. I've conquered Satan. And now I rule the world from where my rule will be extended, and millions will be gathered into my kingdom. And sinners plucked from the kingdom of darkness and brought into the marvelous light. And you'll see it. And your joy no one will take from you. Verse 23, and in that day you will ask me nothing, because I shall be at the Father's right hand. And therefore you will come to the Father and you'll ask in my name. So return to verse 16. A little while and you will not see me, and again a little while and you will see me, because I go to the Father. Is Jesus referring to his resurrection? Yes, but it's more than that. That was just the first step. That was just the beginning of their joys. Because after the cross, I go to the Father to reign over all. A new vision of Jesus. A view I'd not seen before. By the Spirit, sent from heaven, taking what is mine, declaring it to you. The sense of verse 16 is that they will go on seeing Jesus. They will have greater and greater views of Jesus. They will see more and more the glory that is his. Think of the Apostle John. He's Jesus' best friend. He's the one who's leaning on Jesus' chest, isn't he, at the Last Supper. Did John ever imagine the day would come when he would see, when he would hear, when he would witness the whole of heaven adoring, worshipping the Lamb? You are worthy to take the scroll, to open his seals, for you were slain and have redeemed us to God by your blood, out of every tribe and tongue and people and nation, and have made us kings and priests to our God. And we shall reign on the earth. And then you have it, don't you? Worthy is the Lamb who was slain to receive power and riches and wisdom and strength and honor and glory and blessing. Did John ever, that flesh and blood Jesus in front of him, did he ever, in that day, realize that this day was coming, when his Jesus would be at the center of all existence, and the whole voice of heaven would be thundering in adoration of this Jesus? It's a new vision. The resurrection is the first step, but it's played out on a huge canvas. The whole created order. And all will see that he has triumphed. That's the joy, says Jesus, that no one will ever, ever take from you. A new vision of Jesus. The resurrection is just the beginning. Therefore, you now have sorrow, but I will see you again, and your heart will rejoice, and your joy no one will take from you. Well, Christian friends, what of us? A little while and you will not see me, again a little while and you will see me, because I go to the Father. We weren't there for those 40 days, were we? I wonder what it was like. We weren't there, were we? But we too see Jesus. We too encounter him in his other self. By the Spirit, we too have greater and greater views of who he is. That's why Jesus here in verse 16, he uses two different words for see. Okay, he says, verse 16, we put it like this, a little while, and you will not behold me. Okay, you won't see me with these eyes. And again, a little while, and you will see me. And the word see there is the sense of him choosing to be seen. What is hidden from the world is seen by us, isn't it? We have seen Jesus. There's a sense in which we go on seeing Jesus. We all with unveiled face behold us in the glass, the glory of the Lord. In Prince Caspian, Lucy, she says to Aslan, she says, you're bigger. And he says, that's because you are older, little one. Not because you are. I am not. But every year you grow, you will find me bigger. And as we grow older, we find that he's bigger, don't we? More wonderful, more lovely, more glorious. Christian friend, you saw the cross when you were first saved, didn't you? You saw Jesus crucified for me. But what now do you think of the man who suffered there for you? Is he not now more worthy, more lovely, more glorious, more wise, more sovereign, more of everything? And you say, can't you? Yeah, he is altogether lovely. The more I look, the more perfection and beauty and loveliness seems to flow out of him. This is my beloved, and this is my friend. As we grow older, so we see more of him. So he grows to our sight, doesn't he? We get new and bigger visions of Jesus. We see him in his cross, his resurrection, his ascension, his coronation, his coming again. We see him in the perfections and beauties and loveliness of his person. And it's a new vision of Jesus. Last week we were thinking about Albert, weren't we? Albert Cobb went to glory in 2000. Now, some of us remember Albert. He was a simple man. He was a son of the soil, sort of yeoman of England. What was his favourite psalm? Because when I used to go around, we always used to read it. Well, his favourite psalm was Psalm 24, and particularly these words. And you could just see it on Albert's face. He loved these words. It says this: "Lift up your heads, O you gates, and be lifted up, you everlasting doors, and the King of glory shall come in." Who is this King of glory? The Lord, strong and mighty. The Lord, mighty in battle. Lift up your heads, O you gates. Lift up, you everlasting doors, and the King of glory shall come in. Who is this King of glory? The Lord of hosts. He is the King of glory. Talking about Christ's ascension, Christ entering heaven, the King of glory. Did Albert understand that psalm in all its fullness? I don't think he did. I don't think many of us really understand. I don't understand the fullness of Psalm 24. But what was he doing? Why did he want to read it? Because he was catching every time a glimpse of the loveliness of Jesus Christ, the King of glory. And it was filling his horizon. And the warmth was going into his soul. He was basking in the light of the knowledge of the glory of God in the face of Jesus Christ. We go on seeing Jesus. So time to wrap things up. A new vision of Jesus. A little while and you will not behold me with these eyes. And again a little while and you will see me. I will appear to you. I will show myself to you. Because I go to the Father. So it won't be with these eyes that you see me. Because I've gone to the Father. But you will see me. Because the Spirit will come and illumine you. And you'll see. And Christian friends, isn't that what we need? To see Jesus in his word. As we meditate upon that word. As we break the bread and drink the wine. In the company of his people. When we pray together. When we sing. When you stand alone against the world. But he stands with you. And in those dark providences. And in the joyful ones. Sir. We wish to see Jesus, an ever-growing, deepening vision of him. John Duncan was speaking to his students, and he sort of stopped and said, "Oh, I've just caught a glimpse of Jesus." I'm sure you have, as well as I have seen Christians in great distress and affliction. And yet in the darkness, they live by an invisible light. They're warmed by an invisible sun. They see Jesus. I've seen Christians in great temptation. And when the pleasures of sin smile, they stand firm. Because they see the face of another. They see Jesus. And I've seen Christians give up everything. And when the world calls them a loser, they rejoice. And they say, "I have all things." They see Jesus. And I've seen Christians moan and complain and grumble and pull the church down. I know it doesn't happen at Amiens Park. And yet with them, there are others who, when you're with them, they're just full of joy. And just to be with those believers is just to be encouraged. They're so different. They buck the trend of so many Christians. And what is it that's happened to these people? They see Jesus. Christian friends, we're on the other side of the cross. We're not in labor, in travail, in agonies, in anguish. Our Jesus reigns. He is in glory. The beauty, the majesty, the wonder, the loveliness of Him. And that is our greatest need, an ever-growing vision of Him. A little while and you will not see me. And again a little while and you will see me. As we close, Christian friend, maybe this morning you've lost heart. You get to that certain point, don't you? We think, there's just been too many sacrifices. And obedience is just too costly. And that little voice is beginning to say, well, what about me? What about me? What about me? A friend of mine has a photograph of some much-loved Christian friends. Those Christians have given up everything for Jesus. And she just has a look at the photograph and sees their faces on the photograph. And just to see their faces puts new heart into her. But to see Jesus, to see Him, we run this weary race looking unto Jesus. My friend, have you forgotten? Once He was big in your sight, but has He grown smaller and smaller and smaller? And other things have grown bigger and bigger and bigger. Has it been such a long, long, long time since you sought Him? Since you caught a glimpse of the unutterable glory? Oh, Spirit, come. Show me Jesus. Show me Thy face, one transient gleam of loveliness divine, and I shall never think or dream of other love save Thine. We walk through this world, and we can only walk through this world, looking unto Jesus. And when we get to glory, and we see His face with these eyes, we'll find it's the face we've been looking at all through the days of our pilgrimage. A new vision of Jesus.